Thank you for joining us on Aisle Cafe. My name is Sheetal, and the topic today is most certainly something that I'm deeply passionate about. And I have to say, I have been privileged to have these conversations with leaders, business leaders across industries and sectors, across organizations. And well, the voice has been clear. There is no getting around the need for an inclusive workplace. Diversity is what really we will explore, along with inclusion and equity, how to create psychological workspace. And those ideas are going to come to us from someone who's been there and done that, with a wealth of experience in human resources. Chief Human Resources at ICICI Lombard, Jerry Jose, is who we have with us today. Thank you so much, Jerry, and welcome to Aisle Cafe.
Hello, Sheetal, and hello, everyone. Happy to be here and very, very excited to discuss about this topic. This is a topic which has engaged a lot of people, organizations, leaders. And I'm equally excited to basically look at various aspects of what you described in your opening statement.
Yeah, absolutely. And so much to cover, right? And so little time. So let me quickly get into the subject over here, Jerry. There is an increasing emphasis on inclusion and equity in organizations who've already been on this journey of building diversity. So why is building an inclusive workplace and equity becoming so critical to the success of any diversity strategy?
So Sheetal, most companies have realized the benefit of, diversity, and they've been on this journey of building diversity in their respective organizations. The journey that they have embarked on is based on a very clear understanding of the value that differences bring to the workplace. You know, people with different perspectives, different values, different, points of view, different experiences, and how it can, in a way, help the organization to basically leverage some of these differences in order to basically see impact at the marketplace and see success. Obviously, there are many benefits which is very apparent when you have a very diverse workforce. You know, the first important thing is about avoiding groupthink. You know, people basically having the same kind of, thinking, the same kind of norming, belief systems. So, people with different perspectives can actually come in and challenge the group norm, which is there, and basically bring in new perspectives, which actually leads to better innovation in the organization. It basically fosters creativity within the organization. More importantly, it helps build innovative solutions to complex problems that the organization has been dealing with. That's one important thing that organizations see as a benefit of people who bring diversity to the table. Yeah. Better quality of decisions. Decisions become far more richer, varied, and therefore, the quality of execution also basically improves as a result of people with different perspectives coming in. Right. There's also a better understanding of customers, because you have people from different backgrounds, experiences coming in. They can relate to customers much better than what existing people can do. And therefore, there's also a possibility of, identifying untapped markets. And it's quite a obvious thing that organization which has diverse people within its own fold has better chances and is better positioned to adapt to changing market conditions and customer preferences, than a homogeneous group who's always used to basically managing, the same kind of issues and problems. So these benefits of diversity are very, very clear to organizations, which is why organizations have been pursuing this journey of diversity. Now, in this journey, companies have gradually realized that it is not only about increasing the members of the underrepresented groups, because that alone doesn't help to realize the benefits of diversity. It is equally important to ensure that the right environment is created for this diverse group of people coming in, an environment which is conducive, which supports them, helps them to basically participate and contribute their unique perspectives as well as talents to the workplace. So the gradual realization is that, numbers by themselves don't make a difference. It is primarily how the diverse talent in the organization can be engaged so that their uniqueness and differences can be leveraged better for everyone in the workplace. If I were to very simply, define inclusion, it is basically about saying, is everyone in the organization being welcomed, valued, respected, and empowered, irrespective of who they are? And more importantly, do they get an opportunity to basically get visibility in this organization, have their say, be heard, get the opportunity to contribute, and in the process to learn, grow, and develop? So that really, for me, is the journey of inclusion, which basically helps to leverage diversity in a far more better way. Yeah. diversity can't take wings and flourish if it is not built on the foundation of inclusion. Yeah, because if inclusion doesn't exist, you know, the diverse groups are going to feel a lot more alienated. They are going to feel, you know, disenfranchised. They are going to feel that they don't belong to this place. And gradually the disengagement will happen, which will actually cause them to leave the organization and search for newer pastures where a conducive environment exists. So it is very, it's a big imperative for organizations to focus on inclusion in a very big way.
Yeah.
Coming to the question of equity, you know, you mentioned about equity. Why is equity becoming, you know, equally important? When as an organization, we keep increasing the representation of, you know, certain underrepresented groups, it is quite possible that there are certain historical disadvantages as well as some systemic biases that are there within the organization, within the dominant culture of the organization, which prevents and basically hinders the opportunities which are basically being made available for the new people who are coming in, for the diverse people who are coming in. And therefore, it does not create a level playing field for everyone in the organization. So equity is extremely important in order to address these disadvantages and systemic biases that people face, in order to ensure that, you know, the treatment is fair, that equal opportunities are being made available at the workplace, which will help diverse individuals to thrive, survive in the workplace. So therefore, diversity is more than the numbers and the representation, increase that we see in the workplace. It is more about making sure that a platform is being made available to people in order for them to contribute. And more importantly, equal opportunities are being given to them, a fair play field is being available to them, so that they can contribute to the best of their ability.
Right, absolutely. And thank you for, you know, putting into perspective diversity, inclusion, and equity. Very important terms for every single one of us. It's not just about leaders and organizations anymore, because you need to walk the talk. Employees need to understand the need for creating these psychologically safe spaces for us to all flourish and thrive in. So that was, I think, a great context for our listeners. I will also point them in the direction of resources. Please do read up on ideas like intersectionality. That's a very important one to understand when anyone is talking about diversity, inclusion, and equity. Gender pronouns and why they are used. A lot of people are still wondering, acha, why? So homework for everybody watching, please go and read up a little bit, and that's what you can do towards clearing your mind of possible unconscious biases. But we'll come to biases later. Since you've explained to us, you know, inclusive workplaces and how you're a critical ingredient, Jerry, for the success of a diversity strategy, tell us more about how an organization can actually create this inclusive workplace. What are the typical things that people can do, organizations can do to create this culture, I would imagine?
Yeah, so being an inclusive workplace, involves a massive cultural transformation, you know, because it involves transforming the mindsets of people, the practices, the rituals of the organization, so that inclusion is embedded in the day-to-day working of the organization. Yeah. So cultural change can't happen, without the leadership playing a very active role. The role of leadership can't be, you know, more emphasized in this journey that of inclusion that we undertake. The reason why leadership plays a very critical role in this cultural transformation is because they have an important role to play to prioritize, give importance to inclusion, you know, help transition from the existing dominant culture which is there in the organization, you know, because any new thing which has to take root has to basically face the challenges of the dominant culture which is there within the organization, you know. So leaders have a very important role to make that transition from the dominant culture into what they want to be or they desire to be driven within the organization.
Right.
More importantly, they also set the new standards of what is expected from everyone in the organization, because at the end of the day, employees need to understand what are their own expectations in terms of how to become a far more inclusive person. How do I basically imbibe the values of inclusion, of, you know, trust, respect, you know, making sure that everyone is heard, everyone gets an opportunity to participate. Yeah, how do I basically imbibe some of those behaviors? So it's important to set standards for leaders in terms of what is expected from people. More importantly, you also need enabling policies, practices. There may be, like I mentioned earlier, there may be certain policies, practices, which could be restricting, which will be basically be at a disadvantage to certain groups in the organization. How do you basically, you know, eliminate or remove these policies, practices, get enabling policies and practices which will drive inclusion in a very big way? And more importantly, how do leaders become early adopters, yeah, and role model the new requirements, yeah, and expectations from the rest of the organization? So that's why, if you see, you know, leaders have a role to play everywhere, yeah, in terms of making this cultural transformation happen. And therefore, I cannot but emphasize the role that, you know, they have in this journey. And when I say leadership, I'm not talking about top management. You know, I'm referring to the larger distributed leadership at every level in this organization. If you remember what I mentioned earlier, inclusion is about making every person being seen, heard, to be able to contribute, yeah, to be valued. Now, it's not possible for, you know, people in the top management, in the middle management, to ensure this across the organization. You may have great practices, you may have great policies in place, but unless the leader at the front line, unless the leader who is there in the field is able to basically consciously practice inclusive behaviors, drives a culture of inclusion within his own team, we won't be able to realize this basically ambition of driving inclusion across the organization. Right. So it is basically the responsibility of every leader at every level in the organization, you know, whether it's a line leader who is at the front line in the branch, ensuring that his team is getting the opportunity of being seen, heard, and to contribute to the best of their ability, which will make inclusion possible. I cannot not emphasize the role that peers play. You know, we spend a lot of time at the workplace with colleagues. They also play a very, very significant role in terms of how people experience inclusion at the workplace, how they treat you, how they basically, you know, help you to get involved in the day-to-day working of at the workplace. So colleagues and peers have a very, very important role. So it's very important that they are sensitized to what inclusion is all about. They basically understand what are systemic biases that exist in the workplace. How can they address it? How can they make people feel welcome the moment they enter this organization? How can they work together? The important feature about diversity is that it has people with differing views, people with differing value systems. And this can potentially create a lot of conflict at the workplace. And while the leader has a role to play to make sure that he builds cohesion and basically gets everyone to collaborate and basically drive them to achieve the final objective of organizational success, peers play a very, very important role to enable this to happen. Because, you know, how they basically behave and treat the employee when he comes into the workplace, the diverse employee comes into the workplace, how they interact, how they behave with him, plays a very important role. So the organization also has a very important role to play in order to preparing the peer group, the colleagues in the organization to basically be far more open, far more inviting to inclusion, and then make sure that the diverse talent is able to thrive and flourish. So in my own view, leadership plays a very important role, and equally important is building the capability of the peer group and colleagues so that they are far more open about the new diversity which is coming in, more accepting of the people, and therefore basically help them to thrive and survive in the organization.
Fantastic. You know, and I'm glad that you underlined the role that leaders play in this whole strategy, but also how the peers are just as important in creating this atmosphere that is welcoming and nourishing and is transparent, giving people the opportunity to freely speak their mind. But I have to ask you this other question, right? There is a tendency that we've observed in people to make assumptions about groups of individuals on the basis of differences, whether it's religion, gender, you know, ethnicity, and so on. The problem with this is it can lead to, you know, unfair treatment, discrimination, missed opportunities, indeed, for those who are the victims of the stereotyping. So what can an organization do, Jerry, to recognize and address these biases in A, individuals themselves, and also in other people, to ensure that everyone is treated fairly and respectfully?
Sure. So Sheetal, you know, biases exist everywhere with every, you know, groups of people. It's generally the tendency to be in favor or against a certain group, person, yeah, as compared to some other individual, which is typically unfair, you know. So these kind of inclinations are there across, you know, the society in which we operate, and also therefore in the corporations in which we work. The important question to ask is that, you know, are people even aware of some of these biases? You know, some of them are clearly prejudices, they are aware of it. And therefore, organizations obviously today are intolerant of these kind of you know, prejudices that people carry at the workplace and actively discourage them. But there is the kind of bias which people are not even aware of, which is the unconscious bias, you know, because these are biases which creep in because mentally you want to basically make quick judgments, arrive at a quick conclusion because there's a lot of information available. And therefore you unknowingly, you know, rely on your own past experiences, what you have learned, and then take a decision based on that. So you're not even aware that you're taking a decision which is flawed. Yeah. And therefore that comes as a very big hindrance in terms of making sure that you have decisions which are appropriate, which are the right decisions, the right things to do. And it impacts the organization in a very big way. A simple example I can give you is about, you know, you favoring or showing, basically promoting certain kinds of people because of the similarities that you have with them. You know, it could be that they are from the same city. They may be from the same colleges that you passed out from. And you may do it all unknowingly, you know, you just because, you know, somewhere at the back of your mind, you're making a quick decision in terms of how you want to judge and basically take a decision about this person.
Right.
So I think so the first step that organizations can do is make people realize, you know, build capability around this so that employees are able to understand what unconscious bias, what are the different types of unconscious bias that they could encounter in the workplace. Yeah. And how do you basically become actively conscious about it? Because finally, it is about self-awareness. You examine, do introspection, examine what your personal feelings are with respect to some of these situations and the biases you carry. Consciously evaluate it to see that how can you reduce the impact of these, of these on the decisions that you take. Yeah, that's the first important step, being aware and then basically being self-introspective and self-aware in order to reduce the impact of these biases. The other important thing is about, everything is about, you know, how you basically take steps to consciously include and get to know others. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because your own circle of influence is limited to certain groups where you tend to have the same kind of norms, the same kind of belief systems. So the key in helping to reduce biases is to expand your social circle. You know, it's very important to get into, you know, widening your social circle, connecting with teams, peers, understanding them better, because that's really the starting point for you to be unbiased as far as your decision making is concerned. Understand the circumstances as well as the context in which they work. Yeah, because that's important. You know, unless you understand both these aspects, you know, you tend to quickly make your judgment about, you know, what is good for them, what is not good for them, and therefore take your decisions.
Right.
So that's extremely important in terms of making the right connections, reaching out, and therefore making. The other important thing is, you know, how do you create opportunities to make meetings far more inclusive, you know, because like I said, you know, people obviously may not open up. It is important for you to make sure that people not only get the platform to speak, but also get and actually speak out. And therefore, how do you make meetings far more inclusive? If people open up, you know, very freely, how do you use inclusive language, you know, in meetings? Because one tendency for people is to, you know, make sure that, you know, through their language, both verbal language as well as their body language, they convey certain feelings to people where they feel that they are being excluded from the decisions that are being made or the discussions that are being made. Right. One important thing to remember in this entire thing is that bias happens in the mind of one person, whereas inclusion, exclusion happens in the mind of some other person. So all the actions that you take in order to remove bias, yeah, if you are not explicit about it, if you don't verbalize it, if you don't tell people the intent and the objective of why you're doing it, people who are the recipients of your actions and your decisions will still try to draw their own conclusions in their mind, whether they're being excluded or included, which is why it is very, very important to reach out, to communicate, to verbalize and say, what are you trying to do in order to reduce bias? Yeah, what are you trying to do in order to make the decisions even more fairer? Because if this process is not available and not visible to people, they immediately in their minds take the decision of saying whether I'm being included or excluded. Yeah. So that's very important. You know, how do you verbalize? How do you consciously and deliberately practice, you know, inclusion in order to make feel people a part of the larger, you know, organization, to help them give the sense of belonging to them. So that's extremely important. And obviously you have to promote open expression and dialogue. If you stifle, you know, dialogue, if you don't allow feedback to come in, that can also impact in a very big way the decision making that people can make, you know, in the organization.
Yeah.
So these are some of the steps that organizations can proactively do, encourage people to be aware, constantly try to basically see how to reduce the biases. Biases can never be eliminated. You can only reduce the impact of the biases. you know, how do you, you know, do that through the larger awareness that you create within the company?
Very useful pointers. You know, I was just taken back, Jerry, when you were talking about this, to that classroom situation we've all experienced, right? When we feel that the teacher is only looking at a few students and talking, when will she look at me and, you know, also move her head around to see who it is? It's such a common thing that we don't even talk about it anymore, but all of us have felt it, you know, wanting to sort of bob up and down in the classroom to see if you can catch teacher's attention. So yes, it's important for us to see and also be seen, hear, and also be heard towards creating this psychologically safe work environment for people. Towards that, right? What are your views on some of the, maybe some of the trends, if you could share, Jerry, that you've seen in creating these open communication, transparent workplaces that are conducive to people being vocal about who they are, what they want of the organization, and from the other side, what the organization is doing as well?
So it's extremely important. Like I said, the power of diversity comes in when you're able to get the different ideas from people, the different perspectives, which leads to innovation and organization success. Now, this cannot happen if members don't feel comfortable speaking up, right? I mean, if they're afraid to share their perspectives, they're afraid to raise concerns within the organization, ask challenging questions, it's extremely difficult for an organization to then move forward on the diversity agenda. Yeah, how do people, you know, share their new ideas? Are they avoiding sharing new and innovative ideas, fearing the repercussions of what will be felt by the organization if they do that? You know, all these feelings create what you mentioned as well, a psychologically unsafe place. Yeah, why does that happen? Because people fear that they'll be ridiculed, they'll be, you know, judged, they will basically be penalized, they will basically be, you know, humiliated if people don't accept what they are trying to share. And the belief that I can actually very safely contribute here, share my feedback, you know, very candidly express my views here, share my ideas, and it will be accepted and people will, you know, take cognizance of it, itself builds the confidence of people to leverage their differences in a very productive manner at the workplace. So it is psychological safety has become such a very important, you know, element. It contributes to inclusion happening at the workplace. And that in turn helps to leverage diversity in a very big way at the workplace. And you know, some of the questions that organizations need to ask to just do a dipstick on psychological safety at the workplace is to basically ask the question that if someone has made a mistake, yeah, will it be held against them? You know, what are the consequences of, you know, making a mistake here? Is it safe to take a risk, you know, in this team? You know, is that blame game happen going to happen? Is it that I will have to bear the consequences of that particular you know, decision which has been taken. The other important thing is that can team members bring up problems and ask for help and receive it? If they can't do that, it's a psychologically unsafe place. Yeah. So you know, the environment should be in such a way that it promotes people to highlight problems, you know, bring up issues and discuss that at the you know, at appropriate forums, and also seek for help because, you know, everyone may not be, know the answers for everything. If they don't do that and they don't receive it from their peers, from colleagues, it is a sure shot recipe for disaster for the organization. The other important question to do or sense check to do is also about seeing that, you know, do people in this team sometimes reject others for being different? Yeah. Or deliberately act in a way which undermines the efforts of other people in the team. If these are like some of the small dipsticks that you can do in order to check whether this team is psychologically safe or no. And obviously, if these kind of things don't happen at the workplace, yeah, then it is very, very clear that the ideas in your organization are not going to be stress test. Processes are not going to get optimized. Solutions won't get vetted for whatever is being you know, shared by people. And most importantly, the enterprise loses an opportunity to leverage the contribution that all talent is making. So that's really the big issue about people feeling psychologically unsafe and it becoming a barrier to basically inclusion as well as you know, leveraging diversity in a very big way. And like I mentioned, you know, leaders play a very important role in ensuring that it is a psychologically safe place. You know, first and foremost, they have to be very, very explicit and open about saying, talking about the importance of it, what behaviors that you want to see, role model themselves, and set the stage by using these practices themselves. So that's the first step that leaders can say. Facilitate everyone from speaking up, you know, so show genuine curiosity in people, you know, facilitate people to speak frankly and tell the truth. See, people in a psychologically unsafe situation will not want to bring the bad news to the boss. Yeah, if they feel that they are going to. And that's such a dangerous thing for an organization, you know. And there could be several reasons for it, because they are fearful of what are the repercussions of it. However, if there are norms established by the leader in terms of how failure will be handled, how will this entire consequences be handled? Yeah. How will we use this as an opportunity for learning and pull in these learnings in order to basically then, you know, leverage it within the organization? It will encourage only further experimentation within the team. You know, it will encourage risk taking to a reasonable extent within the team. Otherwise, you have a situation where people don't bring the bad news. You don't know what's happening in the organization. And that's a recipe for disaster. You know, once the event happens is when you'll realize that this has happened. The other important thing is that you need to create platforms where people can give feedback, share ideas. You know, there should be a constant flow of information and ideas happening within the organization in terms of how people are feeling, what are their views on this. Because if ideas, views, information is not reaching the doorstep of the or the ears of the leader, then that is a cause of concern. Because then it means that, you know, information, ideas, views, feedback are being stifled within the organization, and there's no free flow information which is happening, and which will impact diversity in a very big way. So leaders should create the space, create the necessary platform for people to air their views, share feedback. And more importantly, it is about embracing conflict, because like I said earlier, you know, diversity brings different people together. And it is very inevitable that there are bound to be certain conflicts in terms of the value systems that people hold, in terms of the ideation and what they want to bring. It is also important to embrace productive conflict. Because that itself is going to bring constructive debate to the fore, promote sincere dialoguing between people, you know, and people will work to resolve this in a very, very productive way. Otherwise, people are just back off, you know, if they see that conflict, no one is resolving the conflict, embracing it, and basically realizing the benefits of a productive conflict,
yeah.
People are going to back off. They're not going to basically talk about it. And most importantly, finally, I'd like to talk about celebrating wins. It's so much important to recognize the people who do that, who with candor come up, take the courage to give the feedback, talk about it. If you don't encourage that, people are not going to basically come and discuss this with you. So that's celebrating their candor, their courage is equally important to encourage and drive this kind of a behavior at the workplace.
Yeah.
Obviously, psychological safety, it doesn't happen overnight. You know, it needs to be built. But committing it to that aspiration of building a workplace which is psychologically safe, making sure that the conversations are happening, because it's finally one conversation at a time we will be able to move the needle on psychological safety, yeah, and create the necessary environment for people to, you know, thrive and flourish because they have been given a voice to you know, present in an appropriate forum.
Yeah.
So that's really the journey that, you know, organizations are traveling. It's not an easy journey. It's a major cultural transformation, like I mentioned to you earlier,
right?
But it is well worth it because organizations clearly see the benefit from how psychological safety promotes inclusion within the workplace and therefore helps to leverage diversity in a big way.
You know, I like the phrase that you gave us over here. Somehow this is going to stay with me for a long, long time, Jerry, which is move the needle on creating psychologically safe workplaces one conversation at a time. And I'm hoping that this conversation is also moving the needle a little bit over here. And so many actionable insights, you know, because it's all very well sometimes to talk about these things as words, as ideas, but to actually breathe life into them via action and prescribe what could be the right way, that is invaluable. I would imagine in conversations like these, and you've done that for us. Thank you so much, Jerry, for joining us on IL Cafe and opening our eyes to a world when phrases like birds of a feather flock together will be a thing of the past, I really hope. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Sheetal. It was nice talking to you and really enjoyed the conversation.
Likewise.
Thank you.